Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Peter Klein with you today for Hockey Central at noon here on Sportsnet 960. Welcome to the program today. Coming up today, we have No BS with Brian Burke and Jeff Merrick. We have Eric Francis Fridays, as always, for the Beltliner here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, as it's a pretty big day for the Flames coming off of a win over the Anaheim Ducks last night. Here to help us break it down is our Calgary Flames insider, Peter Loubardias.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
All right, Lou, it was quite the night last night for the Calgary Flames with a big victory over the Anaheim Ducks. We had talked going into the Kings game about getting off to a good start and maybe putting them away early. It's a day late, but it's exactly what the Flames did against the Ducks.
Well, it most certainly is. And were they playing that game in Anaheim last night? Because I've not seen a whole lot of that in Anaheim. I would start there. But because we're focused a lot on taking every game by game and staying away from the past or revisiting anything, I guess maybe that's where we should draw the line on all those. How did that happen in Anaheim? Peter, yesterday on our show, we talked about, A, getting back to playing the game the way the Flames can, dictating. And really, that's what they did. And when this team's offensive zone forecheck is in good stead, which, by the way, it was not in Los Angeles the game before, they can create some havoc and they have some people that can put the puck in the net when they're on top of that part of their game, which also even involves your defense. So look at last night. You get an early power play, a lot like was the case in San Jose. It didn't quite happen at exactly the same time, but pretty close. Not a power play goal, but as the Ducks player is coming out of the box, Michael Stone sends a puck towards the net. Elias Lindholm, was it a pretty goal? No. Was it a greasy-type goal where he has a couple of whacks and beats John Gibson? Yes. So now you're off to a 1-0 lead. Remember, though, right after that, they took their own penalty. And I thought to myself, Peter upstairs, uh-oh. Here we go again. Another situation where you score the first goal and you give an opportunity to surrender it, but they didn't. They got through the penalty kill. And the goal for me that really told the story was the second goal. And that was Flames sent a puck into the zone. Matthew Tkachuk forced a turnover on the forecheck. The F2, as they like to call it in hockey, that's the second guy in, supports it properly, beats the other guy to the puck, which, by the way, on the forecheck, that generally is the guy that really made it get in, but how do you support it? In hockey, they call it the F2. Well, Mangiapane was the F2, and he takes the puck, makes a wonderful play, goes to the front of the net, spins around, and finds Michael Backlund, pardon me, for a tap-in. And now it's two. And that goal to me, Peter, A, gives you a 2-0 lead, so that really establishes something. And B, you know, a goal followed by an excellent ozone forecheck that gives you an opportunity to score again. You make a great play, and now you're off to the races. Oliver Shillington, after a good pass from Rasmus Anderson, jumps in. Where was Milan Lucic on the third goal? Standing right in front of John Gibson. So again, some net front presence, some traffic there. And I'm not quite sure what the Kings were doing on the Jankowski goal, because the walk in and Jankowski, who's been, you know, there's a story we'll get to a little bit more in detail, but now it's four. And frankly, if you can't put it to bed at four, there's even bigger problems. And can you imagine this hit this morning if it was 4-0 and that one got away? But it didn't. And it didn't, despite the fact that in the second period, they gave up a lot of opportunities. 18 shots, high end. But Cam Talbot, and there were many, many good stories last night, none much better than him.
No. No, he was exactly what they needed, and they never let Anaheim get a sniff of getting back in because of the play of Cam Talbot. And obviously, I don't know how privy you are to the TV broadcast, but Kelly Rudy going into the third period said, okay, like, I get it, you're up 4-0. Let's make it fun for everyone and help the goalie out a little bit, shall we? He didn't get a ton of support.
That was a great point.
But that,
no, it wasn't the best in the second, and frankly they gave up a lot of chances in the first too, but you know, Cam was so dialed in, he was so in control. He makes 44 saves, which was the most by a Flames goalie in that type of a situation going all the way back to when the team was the Atlanta Flames and not the Calgary Flames with the 44 saves. But you know, you were looking for lots of people to step their game up and bounce back, Peter, coming out of the game that was so disappointing the night before in Los Angeles. And, you know, most of the time I wouldn't look at the goalie a whole lot in a 6-0 game. But wouldn't you agree? That was not necessarily the case last night.
No, and again, just didn't give the Ducks any hope. They would get a chance, and he would be there, and he didn't let them get any chance to crawl back into that game.
No, he certainly didn't, and he was on top of it early. Think even, you know, when I reference the early penalty kill after scoring the game's first goal, you know, he makes two or three really good saves on that first Kings, or pardon me, the games are running together, the first Ducks power play, and that's a huge difference in the game right there, because if it gets to 1-1, you might have a tendency to go, oh boy, we did it again, we had a lead, we let it go, we didn't manage it properly. But you're right, he just did not ever allow them to gain any momentum. And even in the second period at 4-0, the way it went, it did kind of feel upstairs watching, and I've seen lots of these types of games work both ways, where if they ever get one, look out. And that still is two words, not one, by the way. For people who don't know that reference, it goes a long way back, started by me, of course, saying it was one word. And then Ryan Pinder and the rest of everybody taking it and running with it in a good, hard way.
Yes, it's funny how he does that.
But yeah, well, he's good at it. Yeah. He's tremendous at it. Absolutely. But no, it did have that feeling in the second period. And Troy Terry and company, I was so impressed with him last night. Ended up, I think, with 9 or 10 shots and 13 attempts. So the former U.S. World Junior star and U.S. Olympian, that's the best game I've seen him play in the NHL with my own two eyes. And he might have had a chance to completely change that game on his own. But Cam Talbot, not interested. And good for him as he posts his 21st career shutout. And where was his last shutout prior to last night? Same building.
Oh.
So I guess Cam Talbot, yeah, it happened January 6th of 2019. That was his last shutout in that very building. So apparently all the Flames needed to do to, you know, make Disneyland a happier place was acquire Cam Talbot.
Yeah, apparently he's the Ducks' kryptonite that they've been waiting for 13 years.
Pretty good in the first game here. I know it was a long time ago, but, you know, don't forget that either. He was the game's first star in the Flames' 2-1 win all the way back on October the 20th. So it worked out very well, the little goaltender rotation that Jeff Ward came up with for how he's going to play his goalies in a back-to-back situation.
And now you look at this road trip, and after a lot of hand-wringing and frustration after the game against the Kings, you take a bit of a broader look, and that's three games they played pretty well, and 6 of a possible 8 points on the road trip. Now that they head back home to take on the Blackhawks, have to be feeling overall pretty good about how that road trip went.
Well, they should, and they have good reason to feel good about themselves. Going into it, I would suggest that those were probably the numbers that people would point to as to what had to happen to keep them in a really good spot in this ridiculously tight race that apparently is not going away. And I just don't think at this point it's really going to. There might be a little separation by the time we get to the middle of end of March, but likely not much when you just think about how the whole year has gone. And mission accomplished, Peter. Mission accomplished. They had to have it. There was absolutely no way they could come home with, you know, a 1-3 mark, an 0-4 mark. I'm not even sure 2-2 would have been good enough. I always look at those kind of trips and feel that, by and large, depending on opponents, and I'm not sure we can even talk about it that way anymore, because as we found out on this trip, the lowest placed team that the Flames faced, they didn't beat them. So we almost have to completely discard that. I thought in this case, the same way I'll probably suggest what the point total might be at the end of the month when the Flames go away and play 5 games, I thought 5 out of 8 minimum was where you needed to be. And I'll probably think exactly, you know, in that 7 range of 10 the next time, thinking that, you know, you might scrap away a loser point somewhere along the line.
And looking at this trip, I would say the word of the trip was depth. And we see that come out again last night with Mark Jankowski getting a couple goals, although the second one had all the defense of an all-star game on it. But that was a pretty impressive road trip for guys like Jankowski and the depth forwards of the Flames.
Well, it was, and it was an overriding quality story, and they made a big, big difference on the trip. So, you know, probably the star in some ways of the trip might have been Michael Backlund, you know, who had really, really fought it. I know that Jeff Ward last night post-game talked about, you know, having some meetings before Michael Backlund went back to his regular position, or his more comfortable position, as Michael has talked about, even with me, and that's at center ice. And, you know, confidence is such a regular topic on this hit, and you could just sense, you know, we talked yesterday that, you know, he was really starting to be engaged. And even in the LA game, the 7 shots on goal, he was around it, he scored. And, you know, last night, his first multi-goal game since March 10th of last year, when he had 2 goals and an assist in a game at home against the Vegas Golden Knights. And, you know, Michael is an incredibly important player. And one of my favorite phrases, and there are many, when Michael Backlund is an excellent two-way, not just a shutdown guy, but a two-way center iceman on his team, they rarely get beat. Now, I know they did, despite him having a pretty good night in Los Angeles, but they certainly didn't last night, and he scores 2, and, you know, really, not that the game wasn't put to bed in the second period at 4-0, but the Kings, as we've already talked about at length, had lots of chances to maybe get 1 or 2 and then make things interesting, and then Michael put it away with a terrific shorthanded effort. He got around Rickard Rakell, got to the inside, and when you're not going well, Peter, you don't finish that play the way he did. Backhand, protected the puck to go in, top shelf, fabulous individual effort, did it right at the other end to create the loose puck that he jumped on and raced the other way. So, you know, to see Michael in this kind of a groove and feel better about himself after it's been a very, very difficult offensive year where he had to play wing, it's I think he and his contribution could go a long, long way now that he's feeling much better about his game to helping this team get to where they want to go. He's such a vital part of this hockey team.
Before we get to the mailbag to close out the week, there is some news from the NHL today, as Bruce Boudreau, no longer the head coach of the Minnesota Wild. I guess just your thoughts on Bruce Boudreau's time with the Wild and now him being a coaching free agent.
Well, I think Bruce has been an excellent coach for a long, long time. Of course, his lack of postseason success is something that, you know, always sticks, unfortunately for Bruce, right attached to his name. You know, Bill Guerin's had some interesting things to say. You know, he certainly came out a few days ago and talked about, you know, his players were on watch, and they still need to truly push and see if they can find a way to get into the playoffs. Talked about, you know, a time to truly evaluate where he wants to go next. And the only thing that came to my mind this morning was, I don't really think anybody felt like Bruce was necessarily going to stay in Minnesota past this year. Bill Guerin coming in, you know how things work in life. New people in key places generally want what? Their own people, so they can guide it and mold it in their way with their guy. The timing, Peter, I don't know what you think, but I'm curious. A little interesting as to why now. However, we don't know that yet, because I understand that Dean Evason been named, you know, the interim coach for now. But what's coming next?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with some quality people out there and potentially available to Bill Guerin, might this have happened because he feels like he can't wait too much longer and maybe truly has the next guy in mind and working on something with the true next head coach of Minnesota?
Yeah, there are a lot of very good coaches now available, and Bruce Boudreaux joins those ranks for sure. But there, if I'm a coach who is kind of 50-50 in a spot right now, I'm not feeling too great, because there are a lot of very good coaches out there right now.
Well, and of course, I mean, we certainly have to put all the onus when things aren't going well on the coaching position.
Of course.
Oh, anyway, don't get me started. I'm in a pretty good mood today, so
okay.
Don't get me started on the coaching carousel and where it's going. Anyway.
All right.
I know that you can't get rid of 22 or 23 people.
No, but there seems to be a rush to get rid of one nowadays. But let's, again, like you said, it's Valentine's Day. We won't put you in a good mood, or we won't put you in a bad mood. We'll put someone else in a good mood as we answer this question for Lou's Mailbag.
Lou's Mailbag, brought to you by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, your private dining destination. Do business across the dinner table, not the conference table. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
And the winner today is Eric Michalko, who is getting tickets to the Flames against the Islanders coming up Thursday, March 12th at 7 o'clock, plus a $100 gift card to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. So congratulations, yeah. Eric. I'm giving you something nicer than I'm giving my wife for Valentine's Day. The question today...
Well, and too bad to be her, I guess. Newlyweds, I guess you're already off the wagon.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, too bad for her in a number of different instances, but that's another conversation for another day.
Yeah, and you know what? You and I are going to have a conversation one of these days to limit this self-deprecation nonsense you've got going anyway. Valentine's Day.
The question today, Lou, with the XFL recently introducing some new rules for football and Major League Baseball floating the possibility of some pretty dramatic changes to the playoff format, looking at the NHL, what changes do you feel they should consider in the next few years?
Well, the one thing that's been talked about the last couple of years, and I would highly be in favor of it, is some form of play-in game. Or at least what happens in the Western Hockey League and has forever. Peter, I do not like to see playoff spots decided in any kind of mathematical formula. I just don't. I never have. I understand why. Schedules are tight. You know, they play a lot of games in the regular season to begin with, but you know, in the Western League, and they played 72 for a long time, the last couple of years it's been 68. If you are tied for the last playoff spot in the Western Hockey League, they have a tiebreaker game to decide who grabs the spot. So that is something I would love to see. And, you know, think about this year in particular on both sides of the equation, Eastern and Western Conference. How tight those races are. Do you not think there's a better than average chance at this point, you know, on Valentine's Day? And I know we've still got a month and a half basically left to go in the regular season. But I think there's a very distinct possibility this year that a final playoff spot could be decided by, you know, regulation wins.
Mm-hmm.
And I am so in favor of going to some form of play-in game for the last spot, you know, maybe expand that a little bit, have a couple of one gamers, somewhat like, you know, March Madness, where the tournament is actually 64, but they start at 68 and have a couple of playoff games on that Tuesday in lovely Dayton, Ohio, to allow teams to earn a berth into that event. So that is something that I would be highly, highly in favor of. And at the very least, I'd just love to go to, you know, if two teams are tied for the final playoff spot, I think they should play off.
Yeah, and if you want to use the regulation wins to decide who gets home ice advantage for that game, then go for it.
Absolutely. Or in that case, I'd probably be even more in favor of using the head-to-head between the two teams that are involved.
Yeah, I would like that too.
That's how I'd go even before the regulation wins. But because that's an important criteria, and in a three-way tie, I mean, you do need something mathematical to, you know, have one team succeed and fall out of the mix in the right way. But yeah, for me, after that, in a tie, it would be a play-in game, a tiebreaker game, and home ice would go to the team, at least in my system, that had the better head-to-head record between the two teams.
So that is the answer to your question, Eric. Again, tickets to the Flames and the Islanders coming up Thursday, March 12th. That's going to be an important game, as they all are now for the Flames, plus $100 gift card to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, and that is Lou's Mailbag.
Lou's Mailbag, brought to you by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, your private dining destination. Do business across the dinner table, not the conference table. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
Lou, this is the last time you and I are going to be chatting for the next couple weeks. I am off to Japan for a honeymoon, so I won't be chatting with you until the beginning of March. I imagine a lot will change.
You are headed to Japan.
I am. Yes. Yeah. I fly out Sunday morning.
Good for you guys. You know, so happy for you. I think the break for you is coming at an awesome time. My guess is there might be some form of combat viewing in your plans. Lots, I can't even imagine. I would have some interest this year in going to Japan as well. You might be able to guess as to when.
I can figure that out, yeah.
You can probably figure that out somewhere in late July into early August. It's called the Olympic Games. But, you know what? To you and your lovely bride, have an awesome time, enjoy, and please be safe.
We will very much be safe, and it's going to be an absolute blast. I cannot wait. We'll be checking out some wrestling, of course, so looking forward to that. And then coming back and seeing that, I'm sure a lot will have changed in a couple weeks, but a lot will still very much be the same with the playoff situation for the Flames.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Happy Valentine's Day. And by the way, if you're thinking about taking your sweetheart out, Ruth's Chris, great deal, incredible food, and who's ever taking out who or setting it up, because guess what, it doesn't have to be one way.
Nope.
It's an awesome spot. Tim and the group over there will look after you, Brent and company, in a wonderful, wonderful way. And you know, as they say, come hungry, darling.
I couldn't agree more. That would be a very romantic setting for a Valentine's Day dinner. Lou, we'll chat in a couple weeks.
Okay, Peter. Be well. Take care.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
So as always, a little choked up there. So as always, thank you to Lou for catching up with us here on your Friday. Do want to remind you guys of the citywide 50-50 going on right now. Various OPA locations throughout the city. You'll see some Sportsnet 960 talent at when they're there. Buy a ticket, or you can get some online. all of the money going towards kids' sport. Half of it will go to you if you win the 50-50 draw coming up on March 6th. Check out our website, sportsnet.ca/960, for more details on all of that. Time for us to take a break here on the program. When we come back, it is Eric Francis Fridays. He watched the game last night, as we all did. We'll get some of his reactions on that and a couple of the news items from around the league. This, as Hockey Central at Noon rolls on here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at Noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is time for Eric Francis Fridays here on Hockey Central at Noon, brought to you by the Beltliner. If you didn't go there for breakfast or lunch on Valentine's Day, you're probably single now. Eric Francis joining the program as always. And Eric, what a difference 24 hours makes. Hey, a horrible effort against the Kings, and then exactly what you're hoping for against the Ducks.
Yeah, when you score four in the first period, you sure make your life easy, and especially when you do it in a building that's been the worst house of horrors over the last, decade and a half. So it was an incredible bounce back. They said after the game last night that they had talked about it on the bus ride from L.A. to Anaheim the night before, after they, you know, basically dropped the ball against the L.A. Kings, and then responded accordingly. That's a good sign. You know, obviously it's a good sign, too, that they've won 3 out of 4 on this road trip because while they weren't playing tough teams, they were playing in tough buildings where they've generally had a hard time winning hockey games. So there's a lot of signs of optimism if you're a Flames fan. And I think the biggest one is the fact that the Lions have gone back to being what they were, at the beginning of this year and at the end of last year. And I know it didn't work for them in the playoffs last year, but I think the familiarity, just the balance of the lines, the fact that they've got Lindholm back with the other two big guns, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, they've kind of turned their season or, you know, turned things around of late just after they return to their regular lines.
So you think this is kind of when the Flames are at their best, this is what the line should look like?
I think so. I mean, they've had so much success with these lines, generally speaking, dating back to, you know, the beginning of last year. And you know, I wrote a column about a week and a half ago just saying, like, here you are 55 games in, you're still tinkering with your lines. Like, name one other team that's in the mix for a playoff spot or as a Stanley Cup contender that is doing something similar. Like, there's nobody. And so I thought, you know, and I think they admitted that. I know Jeff Ward said, no, we want to get back to regular lines. Like, next week, he said. And he was joking. But here we are, you know, and he wasn't joking. And what was interesting after the game last night was Jeff Ward basically revealing, alongside Michael Backlund, that they had a big meeting about the lines. And, you know, and the players were the ones that suggested that Backlund go back from wing to center. And not just Backlund, but other players were kind of stepping up and saying, yeah, we think Michael Backlund should go back to center. And as part of this open dialogue that this new coach has kind of really introduced and stressed, he said, we listened to them. We listened to what the players had to say, and good on them for being gutsy enough to make those suggestions, because we implemented them. And there's a lot of good give and take there. And again, I think that is a very new development in the world of coaching in terms of the NHL anyway. I mean, you can talk more and more about coaches being inclusive and listening to players, but I don't know of anyone in the league who does it as much as Jeff Ward. And I think it's a fascinating study. I think people should be cheering for Jeff Ward, because that's the way coaching should be, in my opinion.
And you look at on the ice, and you can see there is a difference in the comfort level for Michael Backlund with how he's playing now. There's a bit more confidence to his game the last couple nights.
Yeah, you know, he's on his 5-game point streak, and he's got 3 goals in the last 3 games. And you see it, and he said, he admitted last night, he says, yeah, I think I'm playing the best hockey I've played all year long. And he said he just wasn't comfortable anymore on the wing. And that's what he had expressed to the coach and the coaching staff and his teammates. He said, it worked at first, but then it got stale, and then I got uncomfortable. So he's back to where he belongs, where he's been his whole career. And it only makes sense to me to have him back there, especially after it wasn't working on the wing. So, he's a guy who, you know, again, last night after the game was very candid about a lot of different things. But the number one thing being, you know, I'm a second half player. There's only been one year in my career that I didn't have a better second half than first half. So he said, as frustrating as the first half was this year, he kept reminding himself, listen, you're a second half player, and maybe that's what we're starting to see.
Chatting with Eric Francis here on Eric Francis Fridays on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. This is Hockey Central at Noon. So when you look at this road trip, there was a lot of frustration after the LA Kings game, but they do come away with 6 out of a possible 8 in 3 of those 4 games. They actually played some pretty quality hockey. Is this just the Flames now? Have you seen enough to think that, okay, this is going to be the consistent Calgary Flames moving forward?
No. I mean, I think there's reason for optimism, you know, that they've had this little bounce back. We're talking about a three games, but the fact that they scored 18 goals and the fact that a lot of them came from their depth charges, I think is those are really good signs. You know, we're still waiting for Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan to be Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan. But this team has been, you know, hanging in there despite the absence of a top line. So lots of optimism. Do I think that they're finally going to be consistent from now to the end of the season? No, I think given the ups and downs of this season, I'm not sure I'll ever believe that they're ready to be a consistent hockey team. But I do think if you can get that top line going, but that's been the question all year long. Can they get the top line going? So that still remains to be seen. You're not going to win playoff series with Mark Jankowski and Michael Backlund scoring your goals for you. It's just not going to happen. So they still need their big guns to go, and if they don't, then this team's not going to win a playoff series. So that still remains the big question to me, but it is really a positive development that so many other guys are starting to find their game. Because don't forget, Mark Jankowski, 38 games into this season, he didn't have a single goal. I know we all remember that. And now he's got 5 in his last 7 games. So, you know, that is I think people are looking at him in a slightly different light than they did a month ago when a lot of people thought his career was over and he was destined for the AHL or somewhere else.
This time of year, everyone kind of looks toward the trade deadline. And are you a buyer or are you a seller? And Brad Treliving has said in the time since the Giordano injury that this team is going to dictate whether they're buyers or sellers. If you're in his shoes, how do you view the trade deadline now for the Calgary Flames?
I think you're a buyer because I still think he still wants that right-handed winger for the second line. But I think that you temper it and say, listen, we still got another week or whatever for a week and a half till the trade deadline. You still need to see where you're at then, see where your injuries are at, see where Giordano and Hamonic are at. But I certainly am not one who thinks that this is the year to, you know, push all your chips in, as they say, and, you know, spend a first rounder to grab a rental player. Like, I'm vehemently opposed to that for sure. You know, a second or third rounder I can live with. And, you know, the one name everyone keeps saying is Tyler Toffoli. And I'm not convinced that he's the answer at all. But if he's the guy, he's probably coming at the expense of a second round draft pick. I can live with that. But mortgaging the future to try and, you know, inject one or two players into this lineup to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, the general manager, and speaking with him over the weekend, it's pretty clear he still wants a hockey trade. He doesn't want a rental player. He's never been big on rentals. So if he's going to go out there and get a Josh Anderson, that to me would be their dream acquisition. You know, big, tough right winger who's got a huge upside. You know, but I don't think Columbus is willing to get rid of him. But, you know, if they can find an Athanasius. See, I never want to say it. I never even want to attempt to say it because I can't say it. Athanasiu, help me.
Athanasiu?
There you go.
Oh, I was nervous there too.
You know, he's still got term. He's got speed. You know, he's one of the fastest players in the National Hockey League. There's another guy that would make a lot of sense for the Calgary Flames to bring in. So, you know, there are guys out there with term. Jason Zucker was an interesting one. I still think the Flames were very interested in acquiring him a year after they tried to get him last year. But now that he's been traded to Pittsburgh, that's cross him off the list. So I know he's going to be active. I know he's working the phones. But I also know that, you know, spending huge assets, futures on someone, it doesn't make sense to me.
Just taking a bit of a step away from the hockey part of this for a second, you guys were in Anaheim at kind of a weird time. This was their first game post Jay Bouwmeester, and a lot of the clips coming out of there before yesterday's game were about that situation. You've covered Jay Bouwmeester's career in one way or another for a while now. What did you make of that whole situation?
You know, the most gut-wrenching thing about the whole thing to me was the fact that it was the father's trip, and Jay's dad was there to watch that whole thing. And maybe that's a blessing. Maybe, you know, having his father by his side, certainly I'm sure very comforting for Jay once he came to and was alert, you know, in the hospital. But, you know, for his father to see that, and I guess it's, I don't know, you tell me, is it better to watch something like that where your son is in medical distress on TV thousands of miles away or live just 50 feet away? I don't know. All of it's awful, but that's the first thing I thought of. Oh, my God, it's the father's trip, and he's right there. You know, the one thing my takeaway from all of it is how brilliantly everyone involved came out. You know, everybody did the right thing. The league did the right thing by postponing the game right away. You know, last night they had a little, you know, get well, Jay, moment at center ice with all the players on the ice before the game. That was brilliantly done. The fact that all around the league, players are reaching out to Jay Bouwmeester. They're talking about it. They're talking about the lessons they've learned and how it's so important to live your life because you never know when it's, you know, when something can happen and change everything. I just think from top to bottom, the NHL to the medical staff in Anaheim handled this so brilliantly. And they turned a terrible, very scary story into a real positive one. One of unity and one of professionalism, where everybody did the right thing. So I really look at it as I don't want to say a triumphant story because we still don't know what caused it, and I'm sure Jay is very scared right now, but there's a positive spin at the end of a very dark, dark situation that really scared a lot of people. And I was kind of happy to see that last night, that they kind of put a I'll call it a bow. They put a bow on it. With a beautiful message from the announcer on the Jumbotron and from the players.
Back on the Flames side of things, certainly not quite as serious as what Jay Bouwmeester was going through, but a couple injured players that the Flames have had to handle life without. I guess before we get into some of the specifics on Giordano and Hamonic, how have you felt that the blue line has handled things in the last few games?
Well, obviously pretty well. I mean, I think the first period that Yellison had was a little shaky, but that's to be understood. It was his first NHL game, and I think he calmed down in the second and third periods. That seemed to be the general consensus from the coach as well. And he's an interesting story, actually. I mean, I think people know much about him. They think, you know, he's not a raw rookie. He played 3 years in the KHL, and he won the hardest shot competition, 102 miles per hour. He also led the KHL in hits, like by a mile, like by 50 hits he won. He was the biggest hitter in the KHL, for what that's worth. And, you know, I just think he could be an interesting player moving forward, but obviously not this year, and they're not counting on him to do much this year at all. Listen, talking to the general manager before the game 2 nights ago in L.A., we've been hounding him to give us an update on Hamonic because he'd never spoken to it. He finally revealed it's an upper body injury, not a concussion, not a shoulder. We could have kept guessing, but we would have been there for a while, I guess. And he just said, listen, guys, we're going to know more on Friday when I get home and can talk to the doctors. Again, which is just buying time and not really accurate. He knows exactly what's going on. But I don't think they know with either player exactly how long they're going to be out. Injuries are like that. But the big question is, if they are out long, long term, like 6-7 weeks, you know, how does the general manager react? He would have to go out and get at least one more defenseman if those guys are expected to be out for more than like a month and a half. There's no question about it, in my opinion. But I think that Giordano, I'm no doctor, but if I had to guess, you know, hamstring's not that bad. I'd guess he's no longer than 3 weeks to a month. And Hamonic, it's anyone's guess. I literally have no idea. One of the toughest guys in the National Hockey League, if you ask me. So the fact that he left the game, tried to come back, still couldn't do it. Those are really bad signs to me. But, you know, I guess my best guess would be 2 or 3 weeks for him as well. But we may not find out until he's actually on the ice for practice.
Yeah, that's when we may have to diagnose, I guess, retroactively. Oh, I guess it was only 2 to 3 weeks because they don't tend to give out a whole lot on that. But you're right about needing to require a bit more depth. I mean, heaven forbid someone else gets hurt. I can only name one more defenseman in Stockton. So it's getting dry pretty quick.
Well, good for you, because I can't name the next one. I really can't. And you know, with every hit, I pointed this out on the telecast the other night, you know, Hanifin took that egregious elbow from Vander Kane 2 games ago, and I thought, oh, my God, that's the kind of thing that could dislocate a guy's jaw. But Hanifin was fine. And then there was another hit where Michael Stone took a hellacious hit as well, and he was came up a little bit lame from it. And with every single one of those, you're like, oh, my God. The general manager just be with every hit thinking, oh, God, please not one more. Because one more would have to mean, like you suggest, you know, it'd have to mean a significant acquisition from somewhere. Yeah, you'd have to do it, I think. You can't have three raw rookies out of six in your lineup and still try to fight for a playoff spot. You know, that said, I think the Calgary Flames blue line is obviously they've done a really good job on this road trip. I mean, when you score six goals, that really helps. And they got a key one from Shillington last night. You know, it was the third goal in a game where they then were had officially broken it open. I think the guys are faring quite well, but it's not a recipe for any sort of success in the playoffs. But again, I don't think that's a concern because I think both those big guns will be back by the playoffs for sure.
Eric Francis Fridays here on Hockey Central Noon for the Beltliner on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Just a couple more to wrap things up with you. Taking a look around the NHL, you talked about the job Jeff Ward has done, and I think he has done a pretty good job with the Flames so far. If they were looking to replace him this offseason, there's another very good candidate out there, as there seems to be quite a few. Bruce Boudreau fired by the Minnesota Wild today. Your reaction to that news?
Wow, they seem to be going pretty good of late. You know, they had kind of fought their way back into this fight. And then, you know, they give up a two-goal lead last night, and suddenly the coach is gone. They lose an overtime or shootout or whatever it was. I guess I should be beyond the point where I'm surprised at anybody getting fired the way it's gone this year. But, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong. You've got a much better memory than I did. Like, how many guys were fired in the National Hockey League last year, you know, compared to this year? There were very few, if anyone got fired last year. And this year, you know, it's been nonstop and guys that you weren't expecting in a lot of cases. So obviously Bill Guerin just decided he didn't think Bruce Boudreau was the guy. And we've seen this before where with 20, 25 games left, a coach makes or a GM makes a change and it can really spark a team. But I thought the team had been sparked. I mean, I don't think anybody really thought Minnesota was going to be in the race this year. And the fact that they were spoke well, in my opinion, to the coach. But anyway, he must have seen something internally that he didn't like or the way it was being approached. And off goes Bruce Boudreau. I mean, again, it'll be very interesting to see where these guys wind up, if they wind up anywhere. I mean, people have asked me repeatedly, do you think Mike Babcock will ever coach again in the National Hockey League? And I think it's a fantastic debate. I really do. I mean, but, you know, there's so many relationships in the National Hockey League, and GMs go with people they trust and know. And, you know, how could you be surprised if Babcock does come back? And then again, you know, who's going to be the coach of the Calgary Flames next year? I mean, does Jeff Ward's future hinge on this team winning a round or two in the playoffs or just getting them into the playoffs? Is that yeoman's work enough and something that should be rewarded with a longer-term deal as the coach? I don't know. There's so many things that have to be answered, but the last 20, 25 games will go a long way towards determining Jeff Ward's future.
Last one for you. I don't know if you saw this yesterday, but everyone's protector of the NHL code, everyone's favorite protector of the NHL code, Zach Kassian, in a bit of hot water for kicking an opponent, which in any sport is frowned upon, but the one where you're wearing razor blades on your feet, it becomes that much more of an issue. Did you see the Zach Kassian incident, and what was your reaction?
Yeah, ridiculous. You know, just ridiculous. It's easy now, especially people in Calgary, you know, so throw stones at him because of the back and forth with Matthew Tkachuk. But, you know, I don't even think you need to say anything. I mean, that's just, he's not a smart man. He's not a smart hockey player. And that was a perfect example of it. I mean, that is just so mind-numbingly stupid. And the fact that this is going to be his, I can't remember if it's his third, fourth, or fifth suspension, but I want to say four. It's just going to add to the total. And now we know that there's an in-person hearing, which means it's going to be, it could be, you know, minimum six games. I saw it and immediately said there's five games given his history, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's more. We're talking about being half a foot or a foot away from someone's face.
Yeah.
You know, with a blade like that. And I know his defense will probably be, well, I just touched him. But it was the thought, it was the mindset, it's still the action, just mind numbing. Yeah, I mean, I don't need to come down hard on this guy any more than, you know, the hockey world is going to and has already. Obviously, it's got to be suspended. He's got to be suspended for a significant amount of time because, you know, we've seen instances where guys have stomped on players. And again, not that hard, but you get suspended for that too. When you when you kick someone in the chest, like, I'm not even sure if the NHL's ever seen that before. Good on him for breaking new ground. I mean, just stunning. Absolutely stunning.
Yeah, a real trailblazer for sure. Eric, thank you. Thank you for doing this. Safe travels back to Calgary, and we'll hear you next Monday on with Will.
All right, thanks, man. Happy Valentine's Day. Did guys say that to one another?
That's a new one for me, but thank you. I appreciate it, and happy Valentine's Day to you as well.
See you, buddy.
So there you go, Eric Francis. Putting a bow here on Eric Francis Friday again for the Beltliner. Time for us to take a break here on Hockey Central at noon. When we come back, No BS with Brian Burke and Jeff Merrick. And then Steinberg joins the show for Pinder and Steinberg at 1 o'clock-ish here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This is No BS with Burke and Merrick on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Players getting traded is no new thing in the NHL, but who takes care of moving the player's life to their new city? Berkey lets you know next on No BS.
Last year at Airdrie Dodge, we had 12 lucky winners and gave away a total of $120,000. All they did was buy a vehicle. And like last month's odds of 1 in 70, your chances of winning this month are great. It's pretty simple. See it on our Facebook and Insta. It's Fast Money February. Purchase a new vehicle like the 2019 Ram 1500 with payments as low as $109 per week and get up to $15,000 cash back. And a chance to win $10,000. Only at Airdrie Dodge. Home of the real $10,000 giveaway.
Okay, Berkey, Alex sent this one in using the hashtag HeyBerkey. Quote, on the heels of the Toronto-LA trade, Campbell and Clifford were in New York and went straight to Toronto. Does the new club pay for their personal effects to be shipped from home? Is there a welcome trip for the spouse and family? Is the player expected to pay for that? If the club is, when does that extend into compensation?
Well, the way it works, that's a great question. The answer is the club pays for everything. The players don't pay for a thing. So first off, a traded player has the right to be moved to the new city. The costs of the move are borne by the new club. So the old club, the club that traded him, has nothing to do with this, other than they typically have a moving company as a sponsor, and they can get a good rate for the new team, and they'll get the guys over there the next day. The player's wife actually does 90% of the work on a move, getting the hydro turned off and getting the security system turned off and all that other stuff. Interestingly enough, many times traded players take over residences that are occupied by players who were already traded. So a lot of times you'll have a guy who goes to Dallas living in a Dallas guy's condo that was traded the previous summer. So there's been a lot of interaction like that. But the team has to fly the player in on a house hunting trip. I believe that's the way it used to be in the CBA. I might be wrong on that, but I don't think so. And then pay for the move. And so it's a very harrowing time for the player's wife, usually. The player just plays hockey. The wives really bear the burden on this.
I can remember one player who was traded and insisted that his wine cellar get moved to the new team as well. Now, he was only going to be a rental, so the new team said, hold on a second here. You're only going to be here for a couple of months, and you want us to bring your wine cellar? And that became an issue. That surprised you? Do you have any similar stories?
No. I remember being sent an invoice for a player shipping his dogs. He didn't want his dogs to fly on the plane, so he had them driven up, and we got a ridiculous bill for the dogs and 3 days on the road with these bloody dogs. And I was like, I'm not paying this. There's actually been a few grievances over the years on things like that. The wine cellar, the dogs. Usually a player's got two cars. The mover can bring one. Sometimes the third trainer will drive one car up and you give him a couple hundred bucks for that. I mean, the player doesn't have to do a thing. His wife's got to do a bunch of work, but someone shows up, packs everything, moves it, unpacks it at the new place. It's still disruptive for a player. Getting traded is really disruptive for a player, but it's not like the average person that has to deal with a move. It's all looked after.
Investments feeling stuck? They don't need to be. Book an appointment with a Scotiabank advisor to energize your investing, because your investments can stand for so much more when they don't stand still.
Want Brian to answer your question here? Use the hashtag HeyBerkey on social media. Thanks for listening to No BS.